Welcome to Primary Attribute. We're a Castles and Crusades actual play podcast. My name is Ian. I'm the Castle Keeper, or Game Master, as it's known in a lot of other systems, and I use they/them pronouns.
Hey, my name's Adam.
I am playing myself today. I use the he/him pronouns.
I'm Erin. I also play myself most of the time. Sometimes I play other people, and I use they/she pronouns.
And I'm Wit. Normally I play the kobolds, Grix, and Steamboat Willie, and we all use he/him pronouns.
Yeah, so we're doing something a little different today. If you find you enjoy it, you should interview us on your podcast platform of choice. It'll help people find us. They'll be like, why did you talk about this episode that was non-representative of everything else? But it will be cool anyway. You may notice that Kelly is not here today. That is because she is off. She is traveling. And so we are doing something slightly different today. We're going to talk about other games we have played, because, in a shocking twist, Castles and Crusades is not the alpha and omega of RPGs. You know, it's the one you've always heard of, the one that every podcast does, but we'll talk about some other stuff too. This will be one or two episodes, we'll see how long the conversations run. And I'm going to start with Wit. Wit, what RPG do you want to talk about?
Oh my. I am going to talk about the game Innomine.
Lay it on us.
Alright, so Innomine is a... The English version, obviously, is mostly what I'll be talking about, is a game from Steve Jackson Games based on the French role-playing game In Nomine Satanis Magna Veritas, which is a mouthful. Mom, I'm going to go play In Nomine Satanis Magna Veritas. A lot of words. It came out in 1997, and it is a game of angels and demons who are stuck in a Cold War, Great Game, espionage, political maneuvering situation. The original French one came out in 1989. Both of them are little oddballs for that period of time. They don't have very complicated or detailed rules, but they do have an extremely complicated setting, cosmology, that's the perfect word. The setting is very complicated, though not necessarily the rules. Players play angels and demons, mostly. They can play humans or undead or, you know, like, spirits and stuff, but we're going to be honest, everyone's going to play an angel or a demon. And you're in political maneuvering, you're trying to, like, push your sides forward, you're trying to move up in your own hierarchy. But nobody kind of knows what's going on. Even the highest powers are not really, they aren't aware of what, it's kind of leaderless. Nobody knows the direction that everything's going in, and it's all been stuck in a stalemate for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of, by day, you are, doing small influences, trying to, like, it's a little more slice of lifey, building complicated relationships. It's much more talking, much more social. And that night, you go to the bar where you hang out with your opposition side and, drink and kind of get into fights and whatever. Sort of like the, Cold War, real history Cold War of, like, remote stations where, at the end of the day, the KGB officer and the CIA officer go and have a drink and play cards together. Because, I know who you are. Yeah, you know who I am. Yeah, we're both stuck in this podunk little town, and
yeah. So this is an excellent game for the kids 7 and up, it sounds.
Yeah. it also didn't pitch itself well, because, like, the cover of the main book has, like, a buff shirtless angel with a flaming sword grappling with a big buff shirtless demon who has a giant revolver. And it looks like it's going to be sort of a, James Bond-style espionage thing. Whereas instead it's meant to be much more like John le Carré.
Mm-hmm.
It also doesn't do itself a very good favor in that your characters are tough and powerful compared to, like, humans. But in the grand scheme of things, you're still nothing. And any attention that you draw will compound itself a thousandfold.
What is it like to play it?
Sure. In which aspect?
Any.
Like, mechanically,
when you played it.
Sure. When I played it, it wasn't as good as I would hope it to be because I was 14.
Oh, and, no. Oh,
my whole friend group was 14, and we had all just gotten out of mild to moderate religious trauma. And we were also used to Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
So we didn't quite grasp the whole subtle John le Carré portion.
Okay.
We went in much more action movie style.
Sorry. That is... I am just... 14-year-old. Yeah. No, I'm just, like, amazed.
Sounds like you're much more queued up for, like, a White Wolf game.
Well, it's see, but that's the thing. It is it's very much the same as the White Wolf games, the early ones, at least, where you really weren't supposed to be doing, like, slugfests every day.
No, fair. Mm-hmm.
That's bad. The White Wolf games are also much more talky. And the thing about all these, though, is that basically they give your characters, like, suitcase nukes of powers, but you're not supposed to use them.
Okay.
Both the White Wolf games and Innomine.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Innomine is also really cool because it has a whole music theme to it. The structure of reality is called the symphony. Groups of angels are choirs. Groups of demons are bands. Special abilities that you'll have include things like attunements. Songs are your spells. Resonances are things that you have affinity with. And then when you take like backlash damage of a spiritual variety, it's called dissonance. And a lot of the interactions are just based around like music concepts.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can I ask another question?
Certainly. Please do.
This feels like it would be a really good system to play a different IP in, which is like Good Omens.
Oh, I mean that is one of the
basically
top...
just Good Omens.
Yes, yes, that is like... yes, yeah,
cool.
That I mean that's one of the first listed.
Oh, okay,
media to go off of. Yeah, it is Good Omens. It is John Constantine Hellblazer. It is Sandman, all the dream stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
yeah, the Selling of Hell and like the whole that whole thing, which shows up in both Sandman and Hellblazer. It's also very much another big reference. A big touchstone is Mark Twain's Letters from Earth. So you know, the perfect RPG source material. Paradise Lost.
All really books likes Twin Peaks. Also great for 7-year-olds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, that one is great for 7-year-olds.
Yes.
I loved it when I was 7.
The dice mechanic is very simple. It uses what it calls the D666 system.
God damn it.
you roll 3 six-sided dice for anything. 2 of them are distinguished from the third. You add the 2 together, and you're trying to roll under your stat with modifiers. The other one, the loose one, is the degree of success die, so or the degree of failure die. So if you succeed, how well did you succeed? If you failed, how badly did you fail on a scale of 1 to 6?
Okay.
With a slight twist that if you roll a trinity, aka a 3 and 1s, there is divine intervention in the scene. If you roll a 666, there is infernal intervention in the scene. Okay. So if a angelic player rolls 666, which should be the best roll, that's bad. The character sheet, the rules are super light, even all the way back. The character sheet is half a page, and even that's overkill until you're very late and powerful. You're looking at 6 stats and maybe a couple skills, although you might not even have a couple skills. You're also usually an ethereal or like a celestial character. So you might even have multiple bodies that you jump back and forth between, or no bodies, or you have to go find a body. So it's a little less about the like acquisition of stuff that other games are. And throughout all of it, you're supposed to come to the idea that both sides are wrong and everything's just a mess, and you're all pawns, and humanity is the battlefield, and just it's, you know, you're supposed to like kind of become jaded and disillusioned with the whole thing.
So it is good for 7-year-olds. That's an important lesson they need to
learn. Yeah. The French, they're both fairly tongue-in-cheek at times, although the French one is a lot more so.
You don't say.
The American one takes itself a lot more seriously.
The French one at least understands its own ennui.
Exactly. Well, they also don't have quite the same level of Christian nationalism going on.
No, for the fact that they are officially a Catholic country, they're really fine with being just kind of extremely Catholic all the time.
Yeah.
Amazing.
They're loosey-goosey about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question about the mechanics. When you said divine and celestial intervention, what form does that take? Does that just say, as the GM says, hooray or fuck you, depending on what side you're on, or?
More or less, yeah.
Sick.
It's really largely GM thing, but like, I don't know, you're shooting bullets at someone and you roll the wrong side and suddenly there's a magical shimmering wall between you, and it could be that overt. It could just be like a slight accident. It could be an archangel showing up and like getting in the way with a giant flaming sword going no.
Mm.
Even three deaths on the same results, that seems very likely.
It sounds like for the most part, it's a bunch of like conversation and stalemates that kind of sit there and almost like the way you describe the actual like gameplay sounds like a lot of mutual self-destruction stuff.
Yeah.
Like risk anywhere after the Cuban Missile Crisis. Just
Yeah.
Be a very different game.
Yeah, it's very much like small advantages, small pushing forward. Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky, and there's not quite enough support for it, and it's like a cool system and a great setting, but then kind of a little bit of at least what I keep hearing people run into, and what we ran into was cool. What do we do with it? I think it was too early. I think there just weren't that kind of like slice of life style games to draw on.
Yeah, if you were to play it now or run it now, like, do you think you'd have that critique of it, or do you think you'd be able to work around that, or like using your non-14-year-old lens, what do you feel?
Yeah, I think I would definitely I think I would definitely be able to play it correctly. I think it was a maturity thing and a lack of other examples.
Oh, if maturity is a requirement, I'm right out.
I mean, I think it's like maturity of probably like understanding subtext.
Yeah, not necessarily. Like, you can still make fart jokes, it's fine.
Maturity of how
do you play a game that's about people chatting in a dark, smoky room to, you know, make alliances and stuff, not, you know, ramping your motorcycle off a bridge and firing dual Uzis at a flaming angel that's flying in the air sort of thing.
We know how many times that's happened in our game.
Just every other episode. I just cut it out every time.
Shit, our most powerful character in the game just likes to go fishing.
Yeah,
which would be exactly perfect for Innominate.
Hell yeah.
Yeah,
so you think you could have a good time with the smoky rooms?
Yeah, absolutely.
Would you want to GM the game, or would you want to play it?
Hard to say. Both differently. Both. I like the 1,000-yard view of it from the GM's point of view. I think I'd have a little trouble with the whole like settling on one character and inhabiting them rather than trying to take the big view. But I think I would have fun with both.
Is this the sort of game that it would be better for there to be like a, like everybody to be sort of playing different factions, or like, would it be better to like have everybody on one faction or the other faction?
Yeah, that's another thing. The rules very much do want you to be on the same side.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, so it's the same problem, again, that you run into with the World of Darkness games, where you can play a vampire, you can play a werewolf, you can play a mage, you can play a mummy or a fairy, but you all got to pick one together. You can play them both, but at that point, it's such a kitchen sink. It gets goofy, yeah. In World of Darkness, at least. It's less goofy in here, but you run into a little bit of, well, by the rules, like, it's fine for you all to, like, socialize a little and, like, whatnot, but you shouldn't be doing missions together. That's not right. Sure. You can, there's multiple degrees of renegades. Like, there's angels and demons who have just kind of stopped following their orders, but haven't, like, openly rebelled. And that's one level where they're just, like, a little diminished in power, and their supervisors are constantly yelling at them. And that's a place where if both everyone's at that level, they can interact. Or if you openly rebel and you're just like, no, fuck heaven and hell, then you could play all together much more easily. But both of those are also kind of pigeonholing the game.
Mm.
You're not interacting with the giant structure and all the pre-made characters except as antagonists or semi-antagonists. So it could be done. It would require a little adapting of the setting, but it could easily be done.
Interesting.
It also does definitely want you to encourage players to play as various regular humans, kind of more advanced humans who are like basically saints, or like various kinds of undead, vampires and mummies and stuff. Unsure how exactly how they fit in. Never quite was certain, but that's fine. or like non-aligned spirits, like, I don't know, djinn or stuff.
It just really sounds like they threw a lot of stuff in there with the rest they of did. That stuff at the end.
They did. Well, so there's, I don't know, like 80 books in the French one. So like they get into some corners. Like they, you know, flesh out some areas that are a little less fleshed out in the American English language one.
Wait, so 80 books, like one core book and 79 fucking splat books kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, well, there's 5 editions, but yeah, basically. Yeah, there's, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
There's also there's a sequel version to the, there's a sequel to the French version called Stella Inquisitoris that takes place 5,000 years in the future. The Antichrist has come and been defeated through aerial bombardment from space. Earth is a radioactive wasteland and everyone flies in spaceships, and it's basically open space war between heaven and hell, but like with starship armadas.
Okay. That's,
and then the veil is off, like, yeah, those are angels. Yeah. We're human crew on a ship that is, you know, run by angels, commanded by angels.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a very, I actually, like, knowing that there's a sequel with that vibe, I feel like I'm more interested in playing the sequel.
Yeah. Well, good thing you know some French. Maybe you could translate it.
Oh.
Not available in the English market.
No, I get too angry at the mismatch of the gendering from what I would gender things.
Well, if any of you also speak German or Polish, you could also translate
sure,
it from those.
Sure, sure.
Unfortunately, we are out of luck. I did this morning while I was getting ready for this, finally find a fan translation of the French game.
Oh, that's not like...
So the English version is by Steve Jackson Games, and they fully rebuilt it.
What? Like
the bones are there, but they a lot of the structure changed, and a lot of some of the rules changed. And
yeah, I'm suddenly reminded this was Steve Jackson Games. This is, oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a weird direction for Steve to go.
So a funny thing about it. So it came out in the American version came out in 1997. The GURPS version came out in 2000.
Oh yeah, of course there's a GURPS version. Yeah.
I found a giant pile of the books at Goodwill in like 2001. So somebody like bought them all and then ditched them within 1 to 3 years.
This is a guy who enjoyed some reading and could not find friends to play this with.
Yeah, probably. That's a good bet. That's a good bet. Or some kid bought it and then his parents came home and were like, why do you have something with a pentagram on it named Liber Daemonis?
And it's for school.
Yeah. And then this being Texas, straight to Goodwill.
Mm.
Yeah, so I found it. One problem that I had was that the pile that I found contained both the GURPS, some of the GURPS version and some of the non-GURPS version. And because they both had Steve Jackson Games blazoned over both of them, and because both of them talk about GURPS, because that's their main system, and they talk about it from time to time, even in things that are not it. And they both use 3d6s, and they refer to all the same abilities and skills and stuff. We had a hard time deciphering what was going on.
Oh, no.
But that's a personal issue of being, you know, 14-ish.
Okay.
Anyway.
Cool. Wow.
Goodness.
I think it would make a very good slice of life game. It would make an extremely good, you live in this city, you're all stuck here together, even if you're on opposite sides, and now deal with it all, including, like, other issues that are not part of the war between heaven and hell. Like, you know, random monsters popping up, or a mad sorcerer or something.
Mm.
People going rogue from either side.
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah. That's mine.
Okay. Who wants to go next? I have no plan.
How about you then?
Okay.
Yeah.
I will go. I shall sacrifice myself. By which I mean, talk about a game that I like that I don't talk about very often. So, as a way to doom this conversation already, this is a Fate game. More important.
Okay.
All right. See y'all later.
Yeah, just know Aaron doesn't like Fate.
I don't know Fate.
Aaron, I thought you said you actively refused to play it.
GURPS.
I know you're supposed to play GURPS. Okay.
But I can convince them. I have GURPS Discworld.
That's not actually a great way to get me to play it, bud.
Yeah. But anyway, so I'm going to talk about the Dresden Files RPG, which is also my favorite edition of Fate, which is, of course, the version they came out with right before they came out with Fate Core.
Okay.
But yeah, so Dresden Files RPG is based off the Dresden Files books by Jim Butcher. Urban fantasy, not one of the originals, but definitely one of like the codifiers of a whole bunch of stuff. It's a wizard private eye, and things rapidly escalate from there. I believe it also got written initially as a challenge to write the stupidest thing he could think of, and then he did a really, really, really good job, and now there's like 20 books. So don't turn in something to your English professor where you're like, I wrote a bad thing. They're like, you wrote a really good thing. Congratulations. But it's also something of a kitchen sink setting. There's wizards and werewolves and vampires and the fae, and we're talking Seely and Unseely court fae, not particularly cheerful fae necessarily, and sorcerers and rogue characters and all sorts of things. And you can play as almost all of these in this game. And they're actually all fairly well balanced against each other, shockingly enough. Fate, for those of you who are unfamiliar, it's based off a system called Fudge. Fudge uses 4 dice. On each dice, there's 2 pluses, 2 minuses, and 2 blanks. You roll them, you add them together, so you're on a bell curve from -4 to +4. And then in Dresden Files, you have skills that go from 0 to 5. But Fate, the reason it's called Fate, is because of Fate points. You start with a number of these, and you use them during the game to buy bonuses and rerolls, or to justify aspects in the scene changing. So if I'm playing, and aspects are usually use Fate points to play off those aspects. So if you are fighting Big Scary Werewolf, and you're fighting in the rain at night because it's very dramatic, and there's an aspect on the scene called Dramatic Thunderstorm, and the werewolf is about to hit you, you can be like, hey, I'm going to spend one of my fate points to key off Dramatic Thunderstorm and have like the lightning flash just right to blind him a little bit, or have his paw slip, and so the claw just misses me instead of just hitting me. And then when you build your characters, you also get a certain number of points to spend, and you can very much customize your werewolf, your wizard, things like that. It does genericize things very well. So you can have like supernatural toughness, but your weakness is silver, and that's modeled. You can have stuff that's more basic, like called stunts, where it's like, oh, I'm really, really good at throwing knives, and I get a +2 to anything with that. Or I've learned the very weird skill of learning how to substitute my dancing skills for my dodge. So when I'm making dodge rolls, I could use my dancing skill instead of my dodge, or instead of my athletic skill. It is getting in the weeds mechanics wise, but it's a very manageable edition of Fate. Various editions of Fate have kind of disagreed in how many aspects they have, and when you define those during character creation. Dresden Files does it with, you have a high concept, which is your main thing, Harry Dresden's case, Wizard Private Eye. You have your flaw. I think his was something about being quick to anger. And then you go through and you have 5 other ones, 2 of which are essentially your origin story, and then 2 or 3. And then the other chunk of those are ones that you have to make with other characters. So what were your previous adventures that you had with these people? How did you meet them before? And kind of what aspect of your character came out of that? I found that character creation was a really good way to build up the idea of a character that you had and cement it more in the world, and also made it really easy to start off your adventures because you didn't have to do nearly as much of the, you all meet in a tavern and for some godforsaken reason decide to work with this person. And yeah, I really like how flexible the system is. The setting is really fun. Again, it's kitchen sink enough. You can fit almost anything into it that you want to. And it pulls from mythologies all over the world without explicitly hard sticking to any of them. And it's also does a pretty good job overall of staying out of the way of those mythologies. Like, it's not like, oh, we for example, you know, it doesn't do the yes, Native American mythology. We've decided this about it, and this is how it's interpreted. Like, it leaves the door open for however you want to read into it, whatever you want to import, and it totally supports the, there's three different versions of vampires based on various different myths. And they all don't like each other very much, which is a very fun dynamic. But it does have some power scaling stuff. I think it does a really, really good job when you're lower powered and starts having problems as people get really high powered because you start playing Rocket Tag, where it's like, if your skill is really high and you have all these powers, then you hit like a truck, and unless the other person can defend like a truck or if they have a bad roll, you've just beat the shit out of them. Oh, that's the other thing I should mention. Stress tracks. There's three of them. Stress tracks are like HP. There's one for mental, one for physical, and one for social. You can do damage in any of these, and characters pick up consequences, which, complicated way to cut it very short, you reduce the incoming damage so your character doesn't get knocked out or taken out of the combat or the social engagement or whatever. And those can add up over time, including extreme consequences, which save you the most, but cause a permanent change to one of the aspects of your character, which is the thing I borrowed for doing things like having PCs lose legs instead of just dying.
Sure.
So yeah, I don't know. The system's just really flexible. Fate as a system in general, I have the critique, is difficult to play properly. It's my big no, it's the children that are wrong. In RPGs. Because a lot of people don't like Fate, and I think a lot of them aren't playing it properly. And I'm not saying, you're enjoying the game wrong. I'm saying that Fate does best when Fate points are flying back and forth across the table all the time. And people don't do that. It's hard to keep the aspects in mind. That's why some versions of Fate get really streamlined about the number of aspects you have. It's hard to remember as a GM to make aspects for a scene. I really do like the way that Dresden Files defined how you use aspects and what bonuses and tools they're used for. I thought it did a really good balance between the flexibility of and I declare a new aspect, or I do this and that, versus the here's just the straight mechanical benefit. It grounds it very well. And the last Fate thing I'm going to mention is that it has compels, which are my favorite tool ever as a GM. They show up occasionally in our game, where it's the, hey player, you have this aspect that might drive you to do this non-ideal thing right now. I would like to invoke your aspect for a fate point, so you do the thing. The player can buy that off with their own fate points. They don't have to do it. The GM can also double down, but then the player can buy that off as well. So it does a really good way of mechanically rewarding players for doing non-optimal things that make sense for their character, which is a really hard behavior to encourage in games. And it's also nice because it kind of puts it there on the table in a way that ideally doesn't drive the other players insane, because I think there's a thing where it's like, but I'm playing my character, and they would, of course, switch sides or shoot the bad guy while we're trying to talk to them or whatever. And that can make the other player characters really irritated and angry in a lot of games. And so I think this does a good way of building that kind of non-optimal play into the system in a way that's really, really, really useful, and does a good job of keeping things moving, too. And can stop things from stalling out.
Sweet. You mentioned power balance.
Yeah.
Does it accommodate playing people who are not wizards or werewolves or otherwise super? Oh, yeah.
Yes. So let me pull some stuff out of my head real quick. It's been a long time since I played this game. But so that refresh amount I mentioned, you buy against that when you're buying supernatural powers, and it determines how many fate points you start a game with each time. And mortals have no refresh cost, and they buy stunts for stuff like I throw knives really well, or I have a really cool gun you can't normally get, but those only cost one each. So it's really easy to build out a mortal character and still have like 6 fate points to play through every session. The first time I ever played Dresden Files, I played a pure mortal character and my character kicked all sorts of ass and was able to, at one point, go toe-to-toe with a wizard while mocking them while buying time for everyone else to make their way down the ropes and come save their ass. Yeah, so it does a really good job of balancing that. And it even has a specific like character archetype for people with minor powers, where you specifically only get one of the supernatural powers and not the combination that usually makes up like a werewolf or a wizard. So if you want to have someone who can touch items and tell where they've been in the past, and that's their only power, that's totally supported.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Because that's always something that I've run into with those kinds of games, especially the kitchen sink ones, where you gotta be juiced.
Yeah, this game does some of the best work I've seen in terms of, yeah, making it so all the player characters are balanced against each other. It helps that weapons do have damage ratings, but that damage rating isn't very wide. I think it caps out at like +3. And so and especially with consequences and stuff, it ends up being very manageable. And yeah, I don't think I've ever had a problem where one player felt totally off the rails more powerful than anyone else when playing or running the game.
Uh-huh.
That is very hard, I think. Like, especially with those, like, you can do whatever you want kind of games.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's like, it almost, like, innately everybody just, like, there's gonna be, like, min-maxing.
Yeah. And I think the fate points and because the skill trees and the, like, powers and stunts are separate things, like, people's skill numbers don't get out of whack compared to each other very much. Except in situational circumstances that they spent fate points specifically to do. And then the fate points themselves, because having a lot of them means you have a lot of flexibility on like a narrative level that some of the more supernatural, like locked in characters don't get.
Sure. Cool.
Which is also a fun way of implementing the mortals are flexible kind of trope. One other thing I forgot to mention is that you build a city. So you choose a city this takes place in. Dresden Files takes place in Chicago, like period. I have built out Seattle in this game at least once, and you choose locations, and then this is done as a group. You choose locations in the city. There's like 9 of them. And then you at least loosely define as a group the face of each location. Who's the important character who's here? You know, down at the port, is there a Rakshasa who runs the smuggling rings, and what are they like? And it helps you define factions and where they are, and it's also very collaborative while keeping things limited enough, like per step, to not cause a bunch of player freeze or GM freeze, which I also like. And still giving the GM enough rope to then go and make something surprising out of the ingredients that you've all put together.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. I've always been curious about that one. I've never really played Fate myself. Read a little bit of it, but not much. And yeah, big Dresden Files fan.
I say I'd be really happy to run the Dresden Files game at some point. Even as a short campaign for the podcast or something else, it's been a really long time since I played it.
Uh-huh.
But I ran a campaign for like a year and a half in college.
Uh-huh.
And aside from this, I think that's the longest running campaign I've ever done. And we had a good time. We had a decent ending. To instill confidence in all of you, I have a tendency to biff endings. I'm going to try really hard to not do that whenever this campaign finally wraps up. But yeah, like, it does a really good job of long-term play, even if we wouldn't necessarily do that. And I think having the Dresden Files setting and lore to hang it off of makes it a lot easier to lock in on like the mechanics and stuff versus Fate Core.
Uh-huh.
It's also crunchier than Fate Core, which I personally really like. Fate Core was made less crunchy for a very good reason, because it wanted people to add crunch on top of that, or like change things and adjust things. Like, its skill list is very generic, so it's like you're going to customize these to your setting, right? And then no one did that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I do think that most GMs don't want to do a lot of work to customize their settings.
Yeah, and even if it was just,
that's very tired. It's work.
Yeah, and like, Fate Core went and really worked on, like, here's the dials you can adjust. Here's exactly how you'd adjust them. Here's stuff you'd at least rename it, even if you don't change it functionally. Rename the shoot skill to archery or guns, depending on your setting, things like that.
Uh-huh.
But Fate Core had a big, I'm not sure how many people actually read the book thing going on when it was very popular. But yeah, Dresden Files basically does all that customization for you and does a very good job of it. And there's also only two books, only one of which the players need to have.
There's not four? Three? Oh, no, Your Story, Our World. Okay. Oh, and the
Your Story,
Papers.
Our World, and then they added the Paranet Papers later, yeah. Which added some more setting guidance and more characters. And the book is also just a work of art. It has the stereotypical parchment-like pages. It has a reason for that. This is the beta draft that someone dropped in a mud puddle when they transformed into a werewolf. It has notes by several characters, because this was given to several of the in-universe characters to provide notes on how this person rendered the world, and if they have opinions. Hell, there's even runes that are blacked out, which if you take the PDF and highlight those and copy them into another program, have jokes hidden behind the blacked out sections.
Sure.
Wow.
Like, it's... And there's character examples all the way through that use the same set of characters and do a really good job of explaining the game without intruding on the text of the book super heavily. It's not the, and here's a break for an entire page of this fictional section, and then, or, you know, jamming it all at the end. Yeah. So it's also just a very pretty book and a very good example of how to make fiction in your RPG book without it, without either side, like, derailing the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds very fun. One thing I'll add, there's also a Dresden Files card game that is heavily based on Fate and the Fate Dresden Files game. And it's actually really, really good. And it's even very fun as a solo card game, which is hard to do.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if I ever played that. No, my friend got it. I don't know if we got around playing it. But yeah, they're all made by a company called Evil Hat Games, which is run by good people, as far as I can tell.
I think might be based on the joke about Dresden's hat.
It wouldn't be super surprising. I think they were Butcher fans before they ever. Yeah.
In the Dresden Files books, the covers of all the books show Harry wearing like a cowboy hat or like a fedora kind of a midway between a cowboy hat and a fedora, some kind of brimmed hat. He never wears a hat in the books. All of the covers show it, and it's become a running joke. Like, I think at one point, like, someone does a police sketch of him, and he's like, why do I have a hat? I never wear a hat.
Someone miscommunicated to, I think it was Daniel Dos Santos who does the cover art for that series, and just decided to never stop. Evil Hat has also now mostly doesn't really do Fate anymore, because they ended up taking over the publishing of Blades in the Dark and Monster of the Week, and people really fucking like Blades in the Dark, you guys.
Yeah.
I know this is shocking.
That was almost the one that I chose to do for this.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go for something a little less well-known.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Dresden Files.
Cool. Sweet.
Okay, cool. So let's wrap it there. And then next time we will go over Adam and Aaron's RPGs.
Woo!
Bye!
Primary Attribute has been imagined and brought to life by the people you've heard. For more information about the podcast, check out our website, primaryattribute.com. For questions, comments, and feedback, email us at letters@primaryattribute.com. To follow us on social media, you can find us at facebook.com/primaryattributepod, on Twitter @primeattribute, and at primaryattribute.tumblr.com for all of our Blazed posts. Castles and Crusades is published by Trollord Games. Our theme music was composed by Aaron. Our logo was designed by Adam. This week's editor was Ian, who is me. Thank you, me. Thanks for listening, and we hope you tune in next time to Primary Attribute. Okay, cool. So let's wrap it there. And then next time we will go over Adam and Aaron's RPGs.
Woo. We're not just recording it in the same day or anything like that. No. We're actually going to stop recording. It'll be a completely different day. I'll change clothes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
From one tube sock to another.
Old jokes.
Dear God.